people in my district don't care about the cost. What they care about is when they flip their switch or turn their heater up, that there is a gas supply.
Lawmakers plan for the looming natural gas shortage in South Central Alaska. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 24th of March. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, keeping the Otna dialect alive at the Chickaloon School.
Our kids grow up knowing where they came from and who they are, and a feeling of place.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Wells Fargo, committed to supporting communities and Alaska residents beyond just their banking needs. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by the Association of Alaska School Boards. Fostering safe, connected schools is a foundation for academic achievement through annual school climate surveys. Information at aasb.org.
Securing natural gas supplies for South Central Alaska and the Rail Belt was the focus of two bills that passed the State House today. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
Communities and residents around Cook Inlet are already making and practicing contingency plans for a possible shortage of natural gas reserves, beginning with sudden, prolonged cold weather beginning soon, and stifling utilities if the shortage continues. The pair of bills that passed with no opposition would address some of the problems. However, neither comes with any guarantee of success or of what consumers will have to pay for energy security. Speaker Mike Chenault's plan focuses on building a small diameter pipeline that would deliver gas from the North Slope to the region. His bill sets up a new management structure to replace two existing entities, gives the group studies and conclusions already done and being worked on, and sets firm, relatively quick deadlines, with the mandate of coming up with a plan that would get gas into circulation by the last day of 2015. Chenault says the solution to the region's shortage starts with someone making decisions now.
Alaskans are clamoring for cheaper and more reasonable fuel supplies. We have 35 T's of known reserves sitting at Prudhoe Bay. And while there are other projects out there, and I'll bring it up, the AGEA process, Alaskans are concerned about their own energy security.
There were plenty of questions about the plan. Does it put AGEA at risk, the large diameter pipeline from the North Slope to Canada? Chenault says no. Who builds and owns the line? Chenault says it's still undecided. And he was asked about the price. When the new development team gives its plans for the line to the legislature in the summer of next year, Chenault says it will then include an estimate of the price consumers could expect. Analyses given to lawmakers over the years indicate gas from a small line would be more expensive than a takeoff from the large line to Canada. Anchorage Republican Cherise Millett said the actual price is a secondary concern in her district, and she says people have waited long enough to see a solution come from the state.
People in my district don't care about the cost. What they care about is when they flip their switch or turn their heater up, that there is a gas supply that they can count on. And irregardless, the last thing I want to do is come back from session and tell the folks from my district that we did nothing.
The second natural gas bill sets up a regulatory process and incentives that will allow gas to be stored in depleted wells in Cook Inlet. Sponsored by Finance Co-Chair Mike Hawker, the bill allows constant gas production with no seasonal fluctuations.
When the demand peaks for gas, you can actually pull gas back out of the depleted well in addition to continuing to produce your new well, essentially being able to double your deliverability out of one well. Produce gas in a low period of low demand, put it in the ground, pull it back out when you have high demand situations.
Minority Leader Beth Kurtula said it was hard to accept the incentives offered under the plan. Those incentives are tax credits, with the ability for a tax to go to less than zero, the use of Cook Inlet taxes against production taxes elsewhere in the state, and some operating expenses to be used as both tax deductions and tax credits. She said those are heavy things to accept.
Those are things that give me pause. We've had a hard time figuring out credit after credit after credit in the Cook Inlet on how to get people out there exploring and bringing it back in. And I hope that this will do it, because I'm just not sure what else we really could do to incentivize it.
The bills next go to the Senate, where there's no similar legislation to the Cook Inlet Storage Bill, but a different version of the gas line bill has been introduced and is in the Finance Committee there. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
Elmendorf Air Force Base is giving more scrutiny to staff hired by private contractors after four undocumented workers were allowed on the Anchorage base last fall. Immigration officials discovered the illegal immigrants after they were tipped off by a local union. One of the workers also had a criminal background. At a military construction subcommittee hearing yesterday, Senator Lisa Murkowski asked Dorothy Robine, a deputy undersecretary of defense, about the issue. Murkowski wondered what the administration would do to make sure the oversight wasn't repeated and whether the contractor was disciplined. Robine said she was aware of the incident.
I know the four were arrested. Through joint effort by immigration and Air Force agents. They used counterfeit documents. I think we're using this as a learning experience to improve our clearance approach to security. I don't know if the contractor was disciplined or not. It's hard to believe they were not.
The workers were employed by a construction company to help build new hangars on the base. They used fake IDs to get the jobs. Elmendorf is required to perform labor checks quarterly, but Public Affairs Officer Ashley Connor says the base now completes them every 2 weeks. Connor says nothing was compromised on base when the illegal immigrants were there, but she says Elmendorf will now be more involved in the process of vetting employees hired by outside contractors.
Base officials took this incident very seriously and have begun to, back obviously in October, to do a complete review of all the contractors working on base, and they'll continue to enforce access procedures for all personnel entering the base.
Connor says the contractors are still ultimately responsible for making sure employees are U.S. citizens. The Alaska Cruise Association says the governor's head tax cut plan could end an industry lawsuit. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Association President John Binkley says cruise line officials responded well to Governor Sean Parnell's offer during last week's industry trade show in Miami, but he says there's still work to be done before that can happen.
They agreed if what he had proposed, and it was an oral discussion, he was talking off what appeared to be, though, written language. And they said if that were codified into law, that they would be willing to drop the lawsuit that is currently pending in federal court.
The Cruise Association filed suit in September on behalf of nine lines that sail Alaska waters. It claimed the state used head tax revenues for projects that do not directly impact the industry, as is required by law. Binkley says cruise lines like Parnell's plan to drop the $46 per passenger fee to $34.50. In addition to suing, cruise lines have taken three ships off Alaska routes this season, reducing passenger numbers by about 15%. Binkley says the corporations will resume some of those routes in a few years if the changes are made.
It's in the company's best interest to get the capacity back in the Alaska market and get the Alaska market growing again.
Cruise line officials have said the head tax, which is paid by the passengers, is driving tourists to less expensive routes, and that's caused the lines to redeploy ships. Senate Finance Committee co-chairman Bert Stedman of Sitka says that's just one of several reasons cruise sales have been down.
The other one is the economic conditions that have been underway the last 2-3 years. And the third one is the interest that some in the industry have to use Alaska as an example.
Parnell has not released a bill or amendment spelling out his proposal. His press office says it could be added to a tourism marketing tax credit bill. But several legislative leaders have predicted that measure will not pass. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a standout mentor at an Anchorage Boys and Girls Club.
I called David G.A., the genuine article. That kid is something else. The first couple times I met him and heard about him, I was like, it's too good to be true.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. If you know an Alaskan struggling to find health insurance because of a high-risk chronic medical condition or other uninsurable reasons, encourage them to talk to a local insurance broker about the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. ACHIA was created by the state legislature to meet the needs of Alaskans, and several plans are available. Talk to an independent insurance broker. Information also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the ACHIA.
Chickaloon Athabascan elder Katie Wade passed away a year ago. Wade is remembered for her book Spirit of Chickaloon, but she has also left another legacy. The Yanida'a School, which she founded, is a fledgling but growing center of Alaska Native language and cultural arts in the Matanuska Valley. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer has more about efforts to keep a dying Native dialect alive as part of our series on Alaska Native education.
Its alphabet is intimidating, and phonetically speaking, it's in a class by itself. But the Atna dialect of the Athabascan language is showing a faint but steady pulse. Modern-day speakers of the ancient tongue strive to keep its vital signs strong, and the school Katie Wade founded is one way of keeping the language alive. It's a typical weekday at Yanida'a School on the Glen Highway. Six of the private school's elementary students are here today, gathered around a common table. They range in age from 5 to 13, and they are engaged in learning communication skills, but not in English.
And we're actually hoping within 3 years that we will be having certain classes in total immersion. We won't be quite as advanced to have the whole class all day.
Yanida'a Education Director Gabe Carmen. Today, they'll practice greeting and entertaining a guest. By twos, they go through the exercise. Under the watchful eye, or ear rather, of language instructor Dan Harrison.
Growing up, we had a few words here and there, but Aunt Katie was the main one who really taught us, the kids around my age, the language, and she encouraged us to learn songs and dances and make our own songs.
Harrison learned the dialect in his teens. It's one borrowed from the Copper Basin Atna, since the Chickaloon dialect is lost. Even so, the Atna dialect is in danger of disappearing.
There's probably less than 30 speakers left, that know the language fluently, and they're all over 65 and older.
Written materials in the dialect are scarce. A couple of books of old Native stories exist. In fact, Yanida'a actually means ancient stories. And there's the big green dictionary of Atna words used at the school.
Atna to English, and then there's English to Atna.
Yeah.
We know moose.
Moose? What is moose?
Danigi.
Danigi?
And it is not an easy language to grasp. First of all, it's got a 38-letter alphabet. Although Alaska Natives had no writing, they borrowed letters and combinations of letters from the English alphabet. And many of the dialect sounds are formed using three and four letters at once, posing a tongue-twisting challenge for English speakers. Thus, the word for moose to the untutored eye looks more like degel in an English translation. Harrison tells me some sounds in Atna have no co-equivalent in English. Yanida'a overlooks the Matanuska River under towering cottonwoods. It's not unusual to see wildlife outside the window.
Oh, there's a coyote in the back. Ooh, let's go look.
Teacher Josie Wilcox helped each child individually with their assignments, sitting encircled by kids' desks like a hub in a spoked wheel.
Awesome. Now we're going to open our textbooks.
We get to do so much that they can't do in public because of class size, and they have the freedom, the professional freedom as a teacher. We have to have hands-on. I don't know if you noticed, all of our kids are moving constantly.
5-year-olds get math lessons separately while the older children tackle workbooks. The one-room schoolhouse concept may be from years gone by, but it strikes a chord in the young students.
You know, the biggest difference is probably identity. Our kids grow up knowing where they came from and who they are. And a feeling of place, you know, and they can identify with a land place and a people place, and it helps them not flounder so much.
Katie Wade, or Aunt Katie as everyone calls her, still has a presence here.
Yeah, she was it. It was actually how the school started. It started over coffee one day, and it was my mom and Aunt Katie, and they were discussing some of the challenges that our kids were having in the public school system.
Carmen says Aunt Katie wrote down the school goals. Someone typed them up on paper, and that crumpled paper is now preserved in a frame. The number one rule: teach traditional values. Wade, along with Andrea Carmen, is credited with starting the only tribal school in Alaska. Dan Harrison leads the drumming and singing later in the day. He made up the songs, since the old ones are lost. Harrison says he's still a beginner in speaking the Otna dialect, but he's hoping to recruit others into learning it. Young Jesse Boger is an apprentice language instructor at Yaneda'a.
You know, you really got to start back at the ground floor, learn a new alphabet, you know, like you did back in first grade. A whole new sound system and a whole new way of talking, because the way of talking isn't anywhere close to, like, say, English or Spanish.
Carmen says the school has started native survival skills training during the summers, but students at Yaneda'a do not have to be of Alaska Native descent. Carmen says the school embraces all cultures and invites attendance by children of other cultures. Aunt Katie, he adds, encouraged children to learn to live in both worlds. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
An Anchorage teenager has been selected as the Boys and Girls Club 2010 Youth of the Year for Alaska. David Huff is an 18-year-old junior at East High. He frequents the honor roll at his school and is an enthusiastic supporter of the Mountain View Boys and Girls Club. Huff started attending the Mountain View branch of the club in 2005. He is the penultimate child in a blended family of 10 and has one younger sister. He's clear about what's important, helping other youth, and doing what's right.
Not just when people are looking, but all the time. And just mentoring the younger children, so that's the biggest thing.
Huff hopes to join the Air Force and get a college degree while in the military. He enjoys helping the Mountain View Club organize events, and he takes pride in working to keep the club looking nice for visitors. His warm smile appears frequently as he talks about the things he's passionate about.
Adults always say, you know, the children are the future. Well, I'm 18 now, so I'm getting older, and there's people behind me, so I have to keep it going. It's my duty, you know, not only just for me, but for everyone. That's what we should be doing.
Huff was selected to represent the state of Alaska for the regional competition in Anaheim, California in July. Mountain View Boys and Girls Club manager David Barney brags openly about what a terrific young man David Huff is.
I called David G.A., the genuine article. That kid is something else. The first couple of times I met him and heard about him, I was like, it's too good to be true. But the more time you spend with him, the more you just realize he gets it. And he is... You're proud to just, you know, be able to say that he's from Mountain View, and yeah, he's one of ours.
Barney lists off Huff's assets, his involvement in his local church, his academic achievements, sports, and a part-time job. But he says the biggest thing that makes David Huff the GA is his own self-worth.
He's so comfortable in his own skin, and you see him in a chaotic gym with 75 kids, and basketball's going this way, and football's going that way, and volleyball's in the center. And he can mingle with any part and crowd of that in that gym. It really, he has that ability to gender, racial, economic status. He blends right in with everybody and seems to carry the respect from one group to another.
Huff doesn't brag about himself, but he's excited about the competition and says he plans to make it to the Nationals. Life hasn't always been easy for him. He's had struggles and had to work hard to refocus himself in the past. But his advice to other youth who find themselves bumping along is simple. Don't give up.
Because I haven't always been in the position I'm in now. You know, there was times when I thought, man, what am I going to do with my life, you know? But just don't give up, and the biggest thing, work hard. Because if you don't work hard, in today's society, you're really not going to be anywhere. And take school very seriously, because that's the biggest thing.
If Huff wins the regional competition, he'll be awarded a $10,000 college scholarship and advance to the national competition in Washington. The National Youth of the Year receives an additional $15,000 college scholarship. Pictures and links are at our website, aprn.org.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by AT&T. Information at www.att.com/Alaska or 1-800-252-7266. ACS. With Android on ACS, an app is available to listen to NPR programming on your phone. Complete details at acsalaska.com. And by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for over 50 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. Crowley.com.
The Anchorage Assembly last night unanimously passed a new plan to better accommodate bicycles as a basic mode of transportation in Alaska's largest city. APRN's Steve Heimel reports that the plan's supporters expect the plan to put a lot more people on bicycles if it succeeds in making it safer to ride.
Planners started by asking the city's bicycle users what they wanted and went on to analyze the pattern of collisions between cyclists and motor vehicles. The result is a detailed map of where and how to change existing bike paths or create new ones. Among the startling findings that led to the plan is the fact that a bicyclist on the sidewalk is 20 times more likely to have a collision with a vehicle than a bicyclist on the road. Brian Lippmans is president of the organization Bicycle Commuters of Anchorage.
It's in fact more dangerous to travel on sidewalks than it is to be out on the road, and the major reason is that when you're out on the road, you're more visible and your behavior is more predictable for motorists.
The plan envisions more and more designated bicycle lanes on existing roads. Anchorage and Sitka are the only Alaska communities to have earned the League of American Bicyclists bicycle-friendly designation. Anchorage in part because of an impressive network of trails threading down green belts all over town, following creeks and most of the city's coastline. Those paths have been hugely successful and used by all sorts of people, walkers, runners, rollerbladers, tourists, and others. But high fuel prices and environmental concerns have prompted growing numbers of the city's residents to use bicycles to commute, and the recreational or multi-use trails are not ideal or safe for commuting speeds. Lippmann's organization suspects there are many in the city who would bicycle more if it was safer. In fact, he thinks the plan's goal of doubling bicycle use within 20 years may be met way ahead of time.
What we've seen elsewhere in the United States is when you start putting bicycle infrastructure into a city and provide a safe place for bicyclists to travel where they don't feel threatened, where they feel confident to get on their bicycle and go by bike instead of getting in the car, that they meet these goals in a matter of a few years rather than 20. So I don't see why that's any different, should be any different for Anchorage. I think we'll see significant increase in bicycle ridership once we start implementing the bicycle plan.
The plan itself does not authorize spending any money. That'll take separate actions by the assembly. But many transportation projects are funded by the federal government and already require multiple modes of transportation to be addressed. At a minimum, this plan will set directions for how that money gets spent. Bicyclists showed up in force at the assembly's hearing, totally maxing out the building's two bicycle racks and anything else they could lock up to. There was one amendment which would have barred bicycles from the Alaska Railroad right-of-way. It was defeated. The final vote was unanimous. In Anchorage, I'm Steve Heimel.
600 homemade cookies, 16 volunteers, plus countless loads of firewood and gallons of water and fuel made a 100-mile adventure race possible in the White Mountains National Recreation Area this past weekend. Emily Schwing has more.
What began as a daydream during a river trip last May became a reality for Fairbanks outdoor enthusiasts and race directors Ed Plum and Ann Ferris this weekend.
So we were on a pack rafting trip down Beaver Creek in May, just going, you know. I was just thinking, and I was like, gosh, you know, it'd be cool to have a 100-mile race up here, or in the interior where you've got skiers, bikers, and runners.
And so became the White Mountains 100, a 100-mile human-powered wilderness adventure race in the White Mountains National Recreation Area, 38 miles north of Fairbanks. The inaugural event required a special permit from the Bureau of Land Management, Colin Cogley is the outdoor recreation planner for the BLM's Eastern Interior Field Office in Fairbanks.
So this is really a first for BLM with a group of 50 in a competition race like we're having here.
Unlike other adventure races in Alaska, this race course had everything from rough and uneven tussock-covered trail and large swaths of oozing overflow to what's known as the Wickersham Wall, a near-vertical hill about 6 miles from the finish line, and also a series of ice lakes near the Windy Gap Cabin, about 62 miles in. To all of that, add blinding sunlight and sub-zero nighttime temperatures in the Beaver Creek River Valley, along with howling winds gusting to 20 miles per hour. Ed Plum says that kind of challenge is what a race like this is all about.
Just the gnarly trail conditions, like the ice, the bumps, the rocks, the drop-offs, the wind, the sharp turns, the ungroomed trail is really appealing to people that have that kind of adventurous sort of spirit.
In addition to a tough and variable trail, this year's low snow conditions also made for an adventure. 4 mandatory checkpoints were set up along the course, and racers were expected to carry along survival gear, just in case. Early on Sunday morning, skiers, bikers, and runners from Fairbanks, Anchorage, and one Juneau competitor lined up for the start. Racers were given 60 hours to complete the 100-mile loop, but they all finished long before, with the last skier coming in just before 10 p.m. on Monday night. To limit the amount of wear and tear on the trail, the pool of racers was limited to 50. Some of them had never been to the White Mountains, while others used the trails in the rec area to train. Everyone had a reason to race.
Well, I love the White Mountains. I think it's a great idea to have a race out here. It's a great place to be in spring, plus my birthday.
But I really love just adventures. I love to be out in the Alaskan wild and kind of seeing what Mother Nature throws at me and see if I can handle it.
Fairbanks resident Jeff Oatley biked his way to a win, finishing in just 12 hours and 37 minutes. The first woman to finish was also a biker, Heather Best, who came in Sunday night 13 hours and 55 minutes after she started. The race went off without a hitch. Both Ed Plum and Ann Ferris say they hope the White's 100 might become an annual event. In Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, and Emily Schwing in Fairbanks. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Finnair, with 50 years of flying experience and offering charter service throughout Alaska and the United States. Details online at pinair.com.
Every day, people all over Alaska are discovering how public transportation benefits them, their businesses, and their communities. Public transportation in Alaska provides 7 million rides a year to work, medical appointments, shopping, school, social opportunities, wherever people need to go. With public transportation available, the going is good. Find out more at goodgoingalaska.com. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Mobility Coalition, a nonprofit organization. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Begin your UAF fisheries degree at any major University of Alaska campus and finish in Fairbanks or Juneau. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.